Welcome, everyone. We have to be about to begin. Bez Hashem, power word, shir number 68. So in regards to responding to verbal attacks, there are times where, unfortunately, people will attack you verbally. And the tendency immediately, some people, they withdraw in a shell. Others reply back in an equally strong remark. If you do that, you need to recognize you're not gaining much. And really, you're not gaining anything. And it's important to try to be prepared in advance. How do you respond to verbal attacks in a manner that will influence the other person to calm down? And also to feel, make you feel better about that distressing encounter, as you're interacting, and how to handle that. So, for example, if on the fundraising trip to the United States on behalf of a yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, a rabbi called a person up who gave a donation to the yeshiva through a different representative of the yeshiva the previous year, and he introduced himself. And the person on the other phone, the donor, the potential donor, reacted, "Oh, who the heck is this rabbi? Who the heck are you?" And undaunted, he responded, "Wow, that's a novel way of answering a phone." You know, like sort of responding back in a very musing, humorous way, and diffuses it a little bit. Could get the other person maybe a little more angry, but you're doing the right thing by not making yourself moved by the other person's verbal insult. So while not everyone finds it easy to be creative in those difficult moments when you're literally being attacked, there are times you could actually request a direct request for politeness in the speech. "I'd appreciate if you'd speak in a more calm tone, dignified manner." The person continues to be verbally abusive, calmly repeat it again. "I'd appreciate if you would speak to me in a dignified manner." Now, after hearing five or six times, most people will get the message. Some very aggressive people, or they're used to being verbally abusive, they won't respond favorably if you speak to them in a calm, respectful tone. It'll get them more agitated even, or they'll be even upset. "How come you're not, you're not responding in kind? Normally I upset a person, I shake them up, and you're not being shaken." But the key is do your best to make sure that you don't give that you are shaken. And this point is very crucial. You keep responding calmly and respectfully. When you do so, others will receive that message that you are self-assured, especially when someone attacks you in a very vulgar way, demeaning way. You're able to maintain your dignity. And what happens is when you do this, other people respect you more and will respect the one who is verbally attacking you less. And this approach will prevent an escalation of hostilities. And obviously the ultimate level is to strive to, for the traits necessary to refrain from insulting anyone, but at least, do your best to calmly try to diffuse the situation if someone is verbally attacking you. So that is one point of how to respond to verbal attacks. Another point is about revealing someone's secrets in a person's presence. Now, generally speaking, of course, if someone told you something, private information and confidence, even if it's not a negative thing, you're not supposed to really reveal it to other people. It's called Megala Said, and one is not supposed to do that. But if you reveal that information in the presence of the person who does not want it revealed, that is an additional Ister, because it creates more suffering and there's a violation of Einas Devarim. You're actually causing him pain by openly revealing what he once kept secret. So, for example, and it could be even not necessarily a negative thing, someone suffering an illness, doesn't want other people to know about it. Sometimes these ashkafas, you should say, so people should daven for you, whatever it is. Bottom line is the one who has the illness does not want it revealed, but to other people. So you have to respect the person's wishes, and you cannot tell others. And if you say it in the presence of him or her, you're distressing them. And even to ask questions about the illness is forbidden when others are around, because he already or she already made it clear, "I don't want you to talk about it." So although your intentions are maybe positive, you want to help the person, you're concerned about their welfare, you want to daven for them, you want to give them chizik, but still, if they want it private, you need to also be sensitive to their wishes and keep this information private. There's times where someone's about to get engaged and they don't want people to know yet that they're getting engaged, but they told you. So don't wish them mazel tov in front of other people, obviously, because they still want it to be kept secret. So that's the idea of not revealing someone's secrets, and certainly not to reveal someone's secrets in his presence or in front of other people. And the next thing is, he brings an interesting observation here, Rabbi Zelig Pliskin. He says on his own book, which we're basing this on right now, Power of Words, he says that one of the problems of this particular book and books like this is that the ones who need it are usually the least likely to read it. You have this where people who are sensitive to Lashon Hara will read and learn Hilchos Chafetz Chaim and Shmiras HaLashon. The ones that are less so, it'll be harder for them to start getting involved with that, right? Like someone who has anger, he should read the book on Kas, but very often a person that is not so, that's not his main problem, they'll read it. So we have this problem often, or even the Shalom Bayis material, very often the one who needs it most usually is resistant to it. They you know, it takes a while to get them to read it. And he says that basically to try to encourage them, to find creative ways to get people that really could use this book, he says in particular, but I could say pretty much with any other type of safe or beneficial book that someone could benefit from and they're resistant to it, to find creative ways to get them to learn that. And it'll be very, very helpful to them. Another point he talks about is there's a big difference between disagreeing with someone and ridiculing someone. Disagreeing with someone is totally mutter. Ridiculing a person is usser. When you're ridiculing somebody, the premise is that you're not merely stating that your opinion differs from the other person's opinion, but you're actually attacking them. You're attacking and humiliating the person themselves. You say, for example, I don't see how any reasonable person would say such a thing. You want to become a Talmud Chacham, that's funny, you know, that's hilarious. Or only a total idiot would think that way. Or you're thinking with the mind of a five-year-old. Those type of things is ridicule. Usser, Aynaz Devarim. On a practical level, ridiculing someone makes the person feel distressed. And they'll be much less likely to really hear what you have to say to them. It's a tactic used sometimes in debates, unfortunately. Political debates, or even when two people are arguing, or interrogations, where the goal is to arouse the anger or anxiety or distress of the victim. But when you're sincerely interested in helping another person, when you sincerely want to win the person over to your point of view, it's very important to speak in a respectful manner. That will allow the person to save face, it'll make easier for the other person to ultimately agree with you. So again, remember the difference between disagreeing with someone, which is mutter, and ridiculing him, which is usser. Another thing that we have to be very careful to avoid is to rub it in. When someone makes a mistake, you let's say you gave a person advice and they didn't listen to you and they got into some trouble because they failed to listen to your advice. You may be tempted to say, you should have listened to me, or I told you so. That's rubbing salt in the person's wound. It could only cause pain. When someone suffers because of a mistake they made, avoid making comments about what they should have done. Many forms of the word you should have, you could have, are really a violation of Einoas Devarim. Because why? Because people can't go backwards in time. What's done is done. And it's not going to be beneficial to try to correct it now, or you should be more careful next time. Usually when you say you should be more careful next time is not beneficial. Or you should have bought this item when it was cheaper. Or you should have prepared better before doing this, and now that you didn't, you see what happened. So if a person, had known that he would lose money by waiting, he would not have waited. So don't remind him of that loss. Don't cause them extra, agmas nefesh, because something happened in the past that they messed up, whatever it is, and not listening to your advice, you don't bring it up. You don't open up raw wounds. Similarly, if you got into an argument with someone about a concept or detail and then clarified the truth and you were correct, you happen to have been correct, the other person was wrong. Don't needlessly say things that will make the other person feel bad. Oh, see, I was right, you were wrong. I'm much smarter than you. You should trust an expert. Ha ha, you were wrong. And this isn't the first time that you were wrong, and it won't be the last time. These type of insulting things, very hurtful things. If you were right about something and the other person was incorrect, be very, very sensitive. If it's necessary to point out something, sometimes it is. Sometimes a Rebbe could do that. You know, a Rebbe gives a etza to a Talmud and the Talmud didn't follow it and the Talmud got into a little pickle because of it. So a Rebbe could use a certain type of a shikol hadas, a certain type of a measured way of maybe I could subtly hint at a Talmud, you know, he should learn to listen to people that are more wiser than him and gain their advice. So I'm not saying it can never happen where it could be constructive to point this out to a person, but ruba de ruba, most of the time, it's just rubbing it in. It's rubbing salt into wounds. When something already happened, you can't go backwards in time. They know their lesson anyway. So it's very, very important to really be sensitive to people. And of course, and we're going to end up with this, we'll end off with this, not to spread negative rumors without investigation of the facts. We'll talk about this, Be'ez Hashem, in the next share a little more, but we have to be very, very careful about that. So to chazar over, to review the quickly, the yesidus of this share, to learn how to healthily respond to verbal attacks in a healthy way, calmly, respectfully. It's not easy, but one can try to learn how to do that. Not to reveal someone's secrets overall, and certainly not in their presence or in front of other people. Try to do what you can to convince people who need to read certain books or listen to certain shiurim, even though it's not, they'll resist it, to try your best to get them, if you feel it's beneficial to them, to get them to get involved with that. An example would be people who, you know, have to be more careful with their speech, to convince them to learn Hilchis Chafetz Chaim and Shmiras HaLashon, as an example. Or Sefer Kass if they get upset easily. Or Svarim on Shalom Bayis to improve their interpersonal relationships. It just takes a certain humility to recognize, you know, I could learn something. I could learn something from others, and I could be a Talmud in that sense. And that's sometimes hard for people, but it's important to be open to it and to learn and to grow. Not to ridicule, like we said, there's a big difference between disagreeing with someone and ridiculing, and to not to rub things in. I told, or add salt to the wounds, like I told you. So, bracha v'atzlacha.